Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm your host, David Byrd. This week, we're going to take a look at some of the fascinating technical stories in our world. From Silicon Valley, Michelle Quinn tells us that some students are learning to use hacking skills to improve and protect the U.S. military.
They want to work on some of the toughest real-world problems they're ever going to see.
Tina Trin takes us to New York to tell us about the latest innovations involving blockchain. And they're pests, they're painful, and they could be deadly. But how do mosquitoes fly? Deborah Block will tell us. Tech Week on this week's American Cafe. There's a class at Stanford University called Hacking for Defense, but they don't hit the books or work on problem sets in the library. Instead, they go out in the field tackling real-world problems given to them by the Department of Defense and the U.S. military. VOA's Michelle Quinn talked to Steve Blank, the professor in this class, and to some of the students about their work.
There are more than 100 entrepreneurship classes here at Stanford University. But in the Hacking for Defense class, students learn how to solve problems facing troops and defense agencies throughout the nation.
They want to work on some of the toughest real-world problems they're ever going to see. With all due respect to Google and Dropbox and Facebook and Twitter, which they all have opportunities here in the Valley to go work for as graduates here, these are some problems that make those look trivial by comparison.
So I will contend you probably now understand.
Blank and his fellow teachers launched the 10-week course last year to bring a model for creating startups to military and defense problems. Now the course is offered at 8 other universities. Student projects include helping soldiers in the field deal with mapping technology, creating sensors to help soldiers with injuries, and grappling with cybersecurity.
So I'm working with U.S. Transcom, which manages transportation in the United States, to better improve cybersecurity at the country's seaports.
Benji Nguyen is a graduate student in public policy, a native of Austin, Texas. Nguyen's parents are from Vietnam.
I've talked to them about this class, actually. I mean, their impression is that when I'm here, I'm, you know, studying, reading textbooks, or, like, doing problem sets. When I told them that I'm actually working with, like, the military to help solve a problem, they were really excited about that, actually.
For U.S. students, the Hacking for Defense class gives them a unique chance to serve their country. They are expected to get out of the classroom and into the field, learning the day-to-day situations for soldiers or others in national defense. But the class has also attracted a surprising number of foreign-born students.
We take the military intelligence problems and we scrub them down so anybody could work on them. But I was surprised by the number of foreign students from Singapore and China, from India, who were just interested in learning that same methodology and could take it home from wherever they are.
Some students go on to create companies or go work for the agency they met in class. For some, like Bhuvanan Dayanandine, they are looking for work that is meaningful.
We are working on helping veterans that have experienced some polytrauma and figuring out how technology can increase their quality of life and their independence for a longer period of time.
The students in this class learn they have to first understand a problem before coming up with the right solution. It is a set of skills they can use in whatever they do next. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, at Stanford University in California.
Bitcoin, the controversial digital currency, recently made headlines for reaching a record high valuation of more than $2,700. But perhaps the bigger growth potential lies in what's known as blockchain. VOA's Tina Trin tells us from New York the technology behind Bitcoin and similar cryptocurrencies is being explored by more conventional companies and businesses.
Bitcoin may be the currency of choice, but it's blockchain, the technology that supports it, that has everyone talking.
Every blockchain transaction is open on this big public ledger. So it's kind of like if you share an Excel file with a group of your employees at the office, every time that you update the file, it gets updated on every other computer.
Bitcoin uses blockchain technology to enable anonymous peer-to-peer payments, which is why the digital currency is often associated with illicit activity. But developers are realizing the same technology can be applied elsewhere.
Now there's stuff like Ethereum, which allows developers to do more than just transact money and actually create their own sort of distributed systems and applications.
Blockchains eliminate the need for intermediary parties by relying on a decentralized network of computers, or nodes, to verify transactions. Hudson Jameson helped develop a hardware and software platform for cars based on the Ethereum blockchain.
We put an Ethereum node on the Tesla, and so whenever it would go through a toll bridge, the Ethereum node, or the car, you can think of it, would interact with the toll bridge and autonomously pay the toll bridge. So if you think about what a toll bridge does today, you have to pay a credit card transaction fee. But with our system, it's literally machine-to-machine.
This machine-to-machine communication allows direct access to the digital currency stored in one's digital wallet. Transactions are processed on the spot without going outside of the network. Companies like Toyota, United Health Group, and Fidelity are exploring blockchain and, in part, lending it legitimacy.
We've really seen the space explode into a bunch of different directions, scoring in diversity. There's more people involved than ever.
Only time will tell whether blockchain can set off a chain reaction. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Summer is fast approaching in the Northern Hemisphere, and with the warmer weather comes a painful and dangerous pest, the mosquito. Not only do their bites itch, they can carry life-threatening diseases like malaria, Zika virus, and yellow fever. But now, a researcher, Simon Block of Oxford University, and his team have figured out the dynamics behind how these pesky bugs fly. As VOA's Deborah Block tells us, their work could help scientists find ways to stop them from spreading illness in the future.
Mosquitoes, with their small, oddly angled wings, probably should not be able to fly. But now a team of scientists from Britain and Japan has solved the mystery, using high-speed cameras and computer analysis to understand the unique mechanics the insect uses to stay airborne. Researchers at the University of Oxford face the technical challenge of capturing images of the tiny creature whose large antennae and legs mask the view of its flapping wings. They set up 8 high-speed cameras shooting at 10,000 frames per second.
So normally to record an insect, you need at least 2 cameras, ideally more, in order to have got enough views of an insect. Because with 2 camera views, you can then take any point on an insect and calculate its 3D coordinates. But because of the problems with the antennae and the legs, we end up needing to use 8 cameras just to ensure that any point in time we have enough camera views of the mosquito where we can actually see its wings clearly.
This allowed the researchers to determine that the mosquito's wings flap 800 beats per second, 4 times faster than many insects of a comparable size.
So mosquitoes use 3 aerodynamic tricks in order to support their body weight. The first of these is the leading edge vortex, which is actually used by pretty much all insects, but mosquitoes actually have a much lower reliance on it than other species. The second two are a trailing edge vortex and rotational drag, and these last two are novel to mosquitoes, and they both rely on the really subtle, precise rotations of the wings at the end of each wing.
The team believes those techniques could inspire innovative designs for micro-scale flying devices.
And any of these small drones you can buy, which are normally quadcopters, they work really well when you fly them inside, but as soon as you take them outside and there's the hint of a breeze or any gusts, they tend to fall out of the sky or at least be very, very hard to control. Insects, on the other hand, deal really, really well with even quite windy conditions. So understanding how they can do this is going to be advantageous to us in the future.
But even more important, the scientists say, is that by understanding how mosquitoes fly, they may find ways to keep the insects from spreading diseases in the future. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks for joining me for this week's American Cafe. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can log on to our Facebook page, VOA American Cafe. If you want to hear previous versions of our program, they're at voanews.com. Click on the red Listen tab and look under our broadcast programs. Until next time, I'm David Byrd in Washington. Thanks for listening.